All right. Welcome back to the podcast. We have a lot of special guests lined up. Another one that we have today in front of us is Craig Thomas of Craig Thomas Fitness. He's predominantly an online coach, but does some in-person training in the New York area. Craig, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the podcast, man.
John, thank you for having me.
Awesome, man. I'm looking forward to digging in. Always nice to hear from other coaches. I'm always open to learning from those that have been around longer than me. Right. I know my hairline gives away how old I might be, but I haven't been in the industry as long as most people. But you are a seasoned veteran, my man. And I'd love to know more about you and your story, because I don't know like the whole background. So for the audience that doesn't know you, and for myself, honestly, really is, I'd love to know like what got you into fitness in the first place. And then we'll talk about like why you wanted to become a coach.
That's actually a really great question. You know, I think at the time that I got into it, really in it was one of the things that I picked up after college, and I did a lot of my own fitness. I was really tracking a lot of things that I'd done, the things that I'd learned as well from friends, and from back then there were magazines. There was all kind of literature was out there pre-internet, which has just a lot more resources out. But many of those you had to really get your hands on were library or your common kind of 7-Elevens or whatnot, even from friends who've been kind of experienced in the gym. So much of that really was, to me, was handed down, transcended upon, you know, people that had learned things before. And after kind of really falling in love with it, as far as the competitiveness to it was, which it was in the gym, as well as just how it made me perform better in my own kind of sports time after college, pickup games, just recreationally. It was something that as I moved into New York, I didn't really think about as being a coach. And I kind of fell into it initially. I went into a gym called Definitions, which was just a one-on-one training gym. It was one of the actual pioneers in the entire industry. They had started it back in 1983. And I actually liked kind of their protocol for it. You'd kind of have your set time at the gym that you'd fill people in. And it was called, we're all kind of part of a team. And it was just a one-on-one training gym. And there was no membership at all involved. So you really kind of learned how it is to not only train your own and track your own, but you also learned how to jump in with others. And with their progress, you kind of even learned how their progress was going through another coach, and you had to kind of learn their system and kind of continue on how their programs were. So it was a good learning experience. And I kind of hit my plateau and kind of was banging my head against the ceiling there. And I went off my own in about 2007 and went to a gym in the city called Peak Performance for a long time. And there they brought in a lot of the best coaches around the area. And I am incredibly indebted to that gym for all the knowledge that they brought in, the myriad of you know, seminars and other learning sources that you could really get from that and garner. And
my tooth is almost out on its own.
And I'm a dad of three. I think really it was invaluable as far as choosing really the different kind of avenues I could have gone in this industry. And there's just, I think as you've seen, it's blown up. I feel like not only is it really valued for your undergraduate degree, and I kind of got grandfathered in as I've been this for a while, but I know a lot of gyms that won't even really hire out without some sort of science background, some sort of heavy duty kind of curriculum and college level that you could take with you to really use and to, you know, to teach and to coach, you know. I'm sure you're kind of familiar with it even more than I am these days. But I think in taking that and really kind of pulling from different kinds of methodologies, you know, certifications and all that, and really kind of tailoring that to the kind of way I see myself and what I valued and what I can bestow upon clients. And it kind of brings me to where I am now and kind of what I prioritize, what I think is important, what I think is useful, and which not only kind of makes you perform better and have a better life, but also elongates your life, kind of wards off disease and sickness and makes you productive in life, makes you happier, and just really leads to a better overall just existence on this earth.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think you've been, and I love talking to coaches who've been around like in the early 2000s, because 20 years ago, I'm sure this looks completely different. And you mentioned about starting at Peak Performance 2007. What are some of the major changes you've noticed in coaches, like other coaches in 2022 versus kind of where you're at in the late 2000s?
I think one of the things, and it's in light of and because of the online, is I've the benefits, I'll see two different things. One is we shift toward things which are more about remote training and about programming people and showing them how to do things and having them follow curriculum versus kind of when you're housed under one roof, like within a gym, you kind of take upon kind of the characteristics of what people have been there before you and what they believe the teaching should be. So I feel like it's limited. I think the beauty about today, and not only the newer, and I feel like really the research that comes out, there's a lot more money involved. So you can afford these studies and afford this background research, which I think is fantastic, because then there's more of a focus on how it actually works before and after. And the study groups are larger. And I think that's one of the biggest things now than it was 20 years ago, where much of the research was done really by the very few elite out there, like the Mel Siffs who wrote Super Trainer and the guys out there that really kind of were the true, you know, fathers of this industry, to the people now that have taken that knowledge and been able to really implement it in very specific kind of, you know, methods and ways to coach people so that they can break it down into chunks and how it can, you know, best serve them and how it really fortifies, you know, their physical well-being. So I think that's something which, you know, when you're in it for a while and you see how clients after a while, when you first kind of believe in a system, and for most it might work, but then over time you realize that people really fit certain kind of modules and certain types of formulas that really everybody is can, and it also shifts during their time of doing it too. And what they learn initially is, as you know, newer trainees and then might become experienced themselves, and how they can really, that J curve happens where it really escalates as they get better and better at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. Have you noticed approaches change that much over the last 15, 20 years, or like the general approach for people and in coaching them is kind of the same in a way?
I think that there's a lot more, there's a good amount of knowledge on there on how to approach things. I think though that there's certainly the foundational movements, your squats, your presses, your overheads, your pulls. And I think that they still are valued. I think though, I do think there's been lately something, particularly in the past couple of years, people have fallen into this bit of a pitfall of kind of falling in love with the same movements and maybe not varying it to do supplemental movements to really, you know, work all planes and work an ability to support and to use stability movements and mobility to try and get your lifts even better. And I think that it's, you know, some people call it intrinsic, more joint work versus the extrinsic, which is more the things that we see, the actual muscular movements. But I feel like to really kind of keep injuries at bay, you kind of need to kind of have both work together. And especially since I've been doing it for a while, as I've gotten older, I guess I put a lot more value on the ability to move better. And I feel like when you move better, particularly from a very deeper capsular level from the joints, you really, you're not limited in what you can do. You may not be able to lift as much weight, but you're not limited in what you can do. And I think ultimately outside of here, it really kind of serves you the best when you can move optimally.
Yeah. And I think that's something that just comes with age and just a maturity level. Like in my early 20s, I didn't give a damn about mobility or like moving better. I just want to get in there and move weight. Right. And I think it, depending on your age and depending on, you know, if you're a gym goer or not, like there can be a lot of like tribalism with the gym, whether you're a powerlifter or a bodybuilder or a CrossFitter or functional fitness, you know, there's always kind of categories that people love to be a part of. I think human beings love to be a part of something. Where have you found your journey over the last 20 years in terms of fitness? I know you're more well-rounded now. Was that always the case? Or did you have those kind of like bodybuilder?
Absolutely. No. Yeah, I did. I certainly, the first 10 years, without a doubt, I mean, those bodybuilder basic, those foundational movements were important and really still are now. I don't shun any of those at all now. And I still think they're vital to doing it. I also think though that, you know, as coaches too, you put people in the blocks. I think the important thing is to vary those blocks. And I even find myself sometimes falling into the, because we've become so busy between life that when it comes to our own training, taking care of ourselves, it's easy to fall back on things that we know and be like, well, that's something that I don't have to spend a lot of time on, both brain power wise and, you know, exertion. So I can move through these and still get in what I need to get in. So, you know, sometimes I'll fall back to those and I still love those movements. I still pay attention to them. I might go to dumbbells versus actual barbell when it comes to pushing motions. But things like your basic barbell, you know, squats and deadlifts and kettlebell stuff, absolutely. I still think that there's a place for those. I think there always will be, because really, you know, from a skeletal aspect, and really still as we get older, there's still a huge importance between what those your bones can carry and what your body can actually handle. It's still ultimately something that, you know, that can't be glossed over. You can't escape that.
Yeah. Well, just so some things have to stick around, right? They're there for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that particularly, I think when I think that about the approach to newer people, there might be some specialized machine. I know Kaiser falls into things like pneumatic, where there's air pressure, where the resistance remains the same throughout the whole motion, which tends to be a little easier on the joints. But outside of that, the movements are still the same. And still, when we sit down and stand up, it's a functional movement we use all the time. Bending that, picking things up off the floor. If you have kids, these are all things that actually, you know, serve purpose in your life. You know, getting on the floor and being able to bend down for all that stuff, whether you're, you know, using your hips, your knees, your ankles, it's just all of it. It can't be something that you can get back just by hitting, you know, a bunch of lunges and nothing else.
Fair. Yeah, you got to be well-rounded in that sense. How have you found, like, people that you work with in person or remotely, what are you finding are their biggest struggles with movement? Is it hips? Is it low back? Is it everything? What do you think people's missing right now?
You know, one of the kind of bigger things, I mean, one of the guys who's really probably, you might have seen it, there's the knees over toes guy who I think that's an old, so I actually took stuff with your own Canadian born Charles Poliquin, and he actually came in and I met him a bunch. He taught in my classes very in the beginning. It's about 15 years ago. And he's really also, I put him up there, even really Mel Sips. He's really, really one of the fathers of true understanding of strength and what it promotes. And I think even guys like him who now talk about the knees over toes, that's really something Poliquin's been, you know, promoting since, you know, obviously rest his soul, but what he had done way back when, he had always kind of, you know, really kind of, you know, trumpeted the ability to really kind of bring the knees past the toes with the drive of the heel down, but the value in that, and then how those things in the industry, how things trend towards saying things like, don't bring your knees past your toes. Mm. Go up over the stairs. We do that on an everyday basis. And we do it just as part of life. You can't run without doing that.
No.
So I think that you see these things and they're kind of just kind of repackaged and re-put out there. But understanding them, I think that we've gotten a better and much more clear vision of what they actually kind of can do and how they actually can make the body better. But I think that full range movement really is about it's kind of beating the injury in the beginning, kind of keeping it at bay so that you can make these movements happen.
Yeah. The knees over toes thing is something I remember that when I was in a college class, and they were like, don't put your knees over your toes. And I was like, are you serious right now? Like, what? This information's not correct. And it hasn't been correct for a long time. So, I mean, part of what we do, whether directly or indirectly, is we have to kind of dispel a lot of what I guess were old truths, like knees over toes, carbs after eight, and just things that are not based in evidence anymore. Are you finding that a lot of people you work with are receptive to learning new things, or are people mostly just stuck? Because sometimes we get stuck in our old kind of ideologies. How are you finding that with people these days?
That's actually a great question. And I think that really, you know, one of the things that I think I do my best to try and provide is saying, like, here's the information. And this is what I know about based on really on a lot of years of what they've given for research and backing. And all these, whether it's diet-based, whether it's movement-based, you know, even whether it's sleep-based, really is a lifestyle. It's something that I think that there are certain foundational necessities and really learning, like your resting metabolic rate is. I think those are important kind of things to know. It kind of gives you a guideline on what you can expect of yourself and how you're different from others. I also believe there's a certain level of like a metabolic typing. Back in the old days, there was that. Now it's kind of gone into things about really doing that. You know, there's tons of companies out there that actually can do your DNA checks to say what's best for your body and what really works. So I can't tell somebody what's best for them when really it comes through their lineage. their movement qualities. I can take people who can move weights and not have a problem because they're foundationally stronger, and others who struggle with that, that, you know, even a bilateral movement where they can push through, you know, theoretically harder, it doesn't always work that way unless their body is a little broader. They have a larger center of mass. It's a little easier. So I think it one of the harder things about some of my clients is that they don't fall under that umbrella. Mm. And I think that it really kind of is based and really based upon what they've already done or what they bring to the table. Some practice yoga in combination with what I do. Some don't do much movement at all. Some will play outdoor sports. And I really try to encourage doing as much outdoor activity as I can. Because prior and before, the nice thing about outdoor activities, that's a great measurement tool. So we use the measurement tools of actual resistance in the gym and repetitions and volume and all those things are applicable, and speed, power is all important. But it's also dependent upon what you do outside of there, how you like to spend your time recreationally, or if you're a professional athlete, regardless. So I think it's about what is it your goals are, what is it that you like to get the most out of what we're going to do. And because of that, we can tailor it toward where really you want to get out of this and how you can make things better for you, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it has to translate to what they want at the end of the day. I mean, we can make the best programs in the world. If the client doesn't align with it or doesn't care for what we have programmed for them or doesn't know why we're doing that, it's not going to stick, right? That's one of those things where education becomes huge. Communication becomes huge. Part of really what coaching is. I don't know about you, and I'm sure you've been there. I mean, again, you're a seasoned veteran compared to myself, but one of the things I've learned over the years is personal training is one thing. Coaching is completely different. I found like when I was on the gym floor, the gym I worked at, their sessions were 30 minutes on average, which is barely enough time, especially stacking clients. So it's like, I can give them as much as I can give them in 30 minutes. And then they have to go off on their own until they see me again. That was more like a prescription. Like, here's your workout. We didn't get the chance to talk about nutrition, sleep, stress management, and none of that stuff, right? Coaching. And this is part of the reason why I love remote. And I don't think people get this part is like, we can spend so much more time, even if we're not with the person, working on helping that person. We can do a lot more research. We can give them more information. We can take more time on Zoom calls or audio calls, whatever, talking about other pillars of health, stress management, sleep, water, all that sort of stuff. Where in personal training, in my experience anyways, there was like no time for that at all.
I think that is a fantastic analogy. I think you're right. I really agree. I think a lot of it is always time shortened because I think the idea between what a client would consider, and one of the things really between what we do is I think when you're in person is very much is about only really the time that you have to give to them. Can you really give them within that time allotment? And even underneath that time, you are having them move a certain way or having them understand things. And it's a lot to take in to tell them other types of additives to their life in addition to what they're focusing on doing actually in those moments. I think that's the beauty about online remote coaching is the chance to kind of give materials out there. And I think allows them to take it in when they want to. It allows them to kind of absorb it and chew off what really works for them. And what, you know, because I think things, as we've learned over the years, it just takes time to really kind of adopt certain systems and kind of mindsets to really shift into to kind of create a better experience, both when they're in the gym, what to get out of it, and kind of what to do when you're not there. And, you know, really the autonomy to make your own decisions and say like, well, am I supposed to, or am I not? Is this okay? But really kind of inherently knowing based on what you can kind of give to them from a remote place between providing X amount of research and articles and even time where there's a support system in a community where we can speak to more and even they can offer in things to each other. And I think that helps as well. I think that really is one of the better aspects between doing things about remote from a distance, but coaching. I will say as one little caveat, though, of course, is that, you know, trying to really keep people a specific movement is a little harder. But I think what I also like, though, is they tend to adopt what really works better for them when they can kind of troubleshoot their own issues, which I think is also personalized and also lets me learn sometimes things that I wouldn't normally know or I think I might think should go a certain way in person. They don't necessarily go that way.
Yeah. there's always nuance to everything when it comes to this stuff, right? It's what works one week might not work another week. I mean, that was the one thing with training is even when I went off on my own and I set up my own sessions at a different gym, sessions were typically like 60 minutes, but we had to focus on the workout. Like one thing I didn't want to start doing is talking nutrition in between sets. Then you take away from the work, then, you know, the rest times are too long and they get distracted. But like you said, it's a lot of information to kind of give someone while they're already learning movement patterns and focusing on, you know, getting stronger, moving better, to then tack on everything else. It's a lot. I don't know if I could even, like, if I was in that scenario as a client right now, I don't know if I could take all that in 60 minutes and be able to apply it the next time around or the next day. So that's why I do love coaching, and the community aspect I think is overlooked sometimes. Again, I think the vast majority of people don't understand what online coaching is. It's still, which is weird to say, it's still relatively new just because personal training has always been personal training. It's the way it is. But I think the freedom aspect of things, developing self-efficacy is humongous, and just communication with coach, that to me in the community, if you're a coach that has a community built, like, that's huge, because when people can connect with others that are like them, I think that just elevates them even more to want to keep improving. They have a bigger support system, and those with bigger support networks tend to do better.
Yeah, again, nice way of phrasing it, nice way of saying it. I think that you're absolutely right. First of all, I do think that it's new. I think the understanding of the system and how it works and the nuances, for lack of a better word, but a lot of the intricacies of how it's presented and how it can actually help others. One of the funny things that I kind of have always related to this is when I first learned how to snowboard, and it was really funny when I had an individual coach. He was okay. He was an ex-surfer, and I didn't glean as much off of that. It was a little harder, and I kind of didn't know what to ask. One of the major things really was, it was about 20 years ago. It was later in life, and I didn't really know what to ask, and didn't really know what I was supposed to do at all. I really didn't have a handle on it. And then fast forward about another year later, after going a couple of times with myself, and I went to a small group of about 5 people, and they had asked so many questions that I wouldn't think to ask because they had just gotten more from their experience. And I thought, oh, and there were several light bulbs that went on just from one session from a lot of other people being involved in that group's community, because they had actually brought up things that I wouldn't think that I could relate to myself. And I think that that's a part of the community and training that, you know, when you have people that are going through the same thing in different time periods, people could say, well, I struggled with this back then. And I think as coaches, we all assume, or we can only use our own kind of experiences with that. But when you have a bigger group that offer information, what they're going through or what they have gone through to get where they are, you know, we tend to forget about, particularly if we've been doing it for a while, we forget about things and we expect certain things that should happen. And there's a struggle with that sometimes. And I think that's really one of the stronger values of having a community of people going through at the same time.
I love it. You bring up a lot of good points. I mean, that I think of the online trainer mentorship group that we're in right now. And I think of my client group. It's like people are at different parts of the journey. Everyone has different ways, different things they've experienced or different ways of looking at things. And I think we're all always learning no matter what. So it's, even if you've been through a fitness journey, even if you're a coach, whether new or old, like there are always going to be things that are like that you don't know, right? You don't know what you don't know. And sometimes, like you said, you don't know what to ask until maybe someone else asks it or asks in a different way. And it kind of hits that mark for you. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe there's that.
Absolutely. I mean, even the mentorship and all that, there are things in here. I hit a lot of replays. It's very difficult to get on calls these days, but it's very much like hitting the replays and hearing these things, what people have said and things that, you know, that you need to hear more than once. I think a lot of things that even as we coach, there's a lot of things that I know I need to hear much more than once. Other things I don't. And the things I just hear one time and I get it. And there are other things I just need to make sure that I continue to hear it to try to start to own what that is based on my perspective, based on, you know, kind of how my life would use that kind of information. And I think that's something as all this stuff, which I'm learning from what you guys do and that online or trainer, you know, academy, the idea the mentorship creates is that, you know, there's people from past, people that are newer that have gone through things. And I think we all kind of get to things at a certain point. And for whatever that might be, and I'm having a client right now online that actually had to go back to a few weeks ago. He started and he really struggled and he's had some personal kind of issues with his wife. And a lot of that's really kind of delayed his time. And I think there's a bit of a timidness with his situation. And we actually had to go through something together yesterday, and I had to really kind of take him through it and show him also what it is to do and how it can actually be remedialized to make it easier for himself. And that even though there are certain things in their program to do, that, you know, it's really about taking a little bit for each time of what you can handle and what you can certainly get out of. And it's not just to get through without thinking. I want people to be mindful to understand what they're doing and how it actually may help other kinds of things, whether it's a training actual exercise or whether it's something that they're doing outside of the training world.
Which is huge. And I think the key point you made there is something that they can handle, right? I think that one of the biggest problems people have, maybe when this air midsummer, but biggest time people have any time really that's starting a journey, they're like, okay, I want to lose weight or I want to do this, is they jump into like extremes. They go from couch to 6 days a week at the gym, or they want to, you know, cut out all the vices or all the other foods. And I think small steps really do go a long way. No one transforms that quickly. That's not something that happens. You can speak to that. It's longevity. It's doing the same things repeatedly, being consistent and not perfect, and time. Time is the best multiplier of all time. That's really all you can do. Do you find that happens a lot with your clients, or people are more willing to take that small step and then stack them?
I think it's really hard. I think it's, wow. Being in this area and really working through New York, there's quite a bit of type A personalities. So you have people that are really an all or nothing kind of thing. And many of them, I try to remind them, particularly when they have very busy times, which, you know, your lawyers and your doctors and whatever, especially in the city, you know, you have moments where it just becomes very difficult. And I'll say, look, I've tried to do as much postings about this and mention this stuff, but look, there are times when I have my days where I do 15 minutes here, 15 minutes later, as part of a program, and maybe 15 minutes later, where there's a 45 minute block, but you make the most efficiency out of those little moments that you can get out of your day. Now, I know I might be in a gym where I may have access to or do something from home, but I think I try to at least, you know, bring that up as an option for those that might have even 2 days a week, if that's all that they have. And I try and say, look, the continuity of things is so key though. And I think so much of that is really about not falling off the wagon per se, because when that happens, you get further away from it. And that distance is when you hit that danger part. And I think really when you feel still part of something, that's why the community aspect, you can come back to that, why that really kind of holds you accountable. It isn't just me, but you're now in with a cohort or a group. You've got others that are also saying, well, how are you doing? And I think that it's not just one person you have to answer to, but it's several. And I think that when you have clients that become part of that, I think that's a big aspect and a big part of their lives. They realize that it's not just them. And it becomes something of, well, I'm part of something that, you know, is a little bit more than that. And then you have more time to come back and maybe get better at it and actually put in actual, you know, quality time. And that's going to ebb and flow throughout the year. And I think that's fine. But I think the idea about staying with things and not, you know, falling down into that rabbit hole of getting further away from, you know, staying with some sort of program, even if it's a little bit delayed, you just don't want to be there, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think something that I've worked towards changing in my language is on the wagon, off the wagon, on track, off track. Because if you have a goal and you may, especially if you have a coach, like you're on the journey. Like there's no off the journey. It's just you have good days, you have bad days, because we all will have them. One of my clients brought up the word speed bump, and I've been using it like crazy ever since, because it's like, yeah, speed bumps will slow you down. You know, the stop signs, that, you know, it's you're in that car, you're on the journey, as long as you don't get out of the car. You just stop and turn back the other way, you're gonna be okay, right? It might take you a little bit longer to get there, but it's like, no matter what you do, whether you have a night where you just drank all your calories, or you were, you know, you ate well throughout the day and you trained, you're still on that journey. I think that's where people are like, oh, I fell off the wagon. Okay, I'll start fresh on this day. Like, as we record this, it's a holiday weekend coming up. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking the same thing of like, on Friday, they'll have an overindulgence. Like, ah, don't worry about it. It's a holiday weekend. I'll just start again next week. So it's that mentality I want people to get away from, because it's damaging long-term. I think it's like, once you make one mistake, you stop. And as you said, you don't want to get to a place where it's taking you that much longer to get where you want to go.
Yeah, I think that's really right. I mean, piggybacking off that idea really is, you know, when you think about this as a life choice, and I think that's the difference really what now is versus many years ago. Many years was like, this is my allocation of time in the gym. I'm going to be here and I can do whatever I want away from it. I think the idea about saying that, you know, that this is something that's, you know, up to you, it's your responsibility with, you know, somebody who's staying with you on this journey, is really saying, well, even if I'm on vacation, even if I'm moving a little bit here, can I get on the floor? Can I move? Okay. You know, some of this is also about, like, it's okay to do those moments and you're welcome to reward yourself with things. I'm fine with that. But it's the movement quality to the point of not being so uncomfortable that, you know, you get to those points repeatedly. I think once in a while is fine. It's a gut check, literally and figuratively. I think it's something where it's like, okay, is it worth that to get to that point? It's entirely up to you. Everybody has a different threshold, but I think feeling that way is where you kind of don't want to go. Certainly all about, you know, rewarding yourself is fine with however you feel that that's necessary. But the idea is to feel good about those rewards and not feel like I need to, you know, feel a certain kind of self-disrespect, which is not where you want to go no matter what. Mm-hmm. So staying on that course, no matter what that is, however it wants to be, whether it's through sugar or alcohol or whatever it is, the horrible things in life, which we all, it's normal. It's part of being, you know, who we are. And certainly you even have probably a bigger leeway in order to do that the more you work out with. But the idea in continuing that to where it becomes an uncomfortable state, to where now working out becomes further distance away and it becomes, I will get to it. And kind of in the moment, you're not moving very well. You're not even just being good to your body. I think a lot of this is also just the self-respect of really going through this and saying, well, I actually feel good. It's going back to that same kind of adage. I'm really saying, like, do I feel good? Do I feel okay? Am I clear? Can I move okay? Or is it something that you're in discomfort or pain? Because if you're in discomfort or pain, no matter what, something's not going right.
Mm-hmm. I love that you use the word respect. I've actually never thought of it like that, because it's true. I think a lot of people, and myself included, I've been there. You beat yourself up, right? For perceived lack of results or lack of progress, or just in the moment, you know, you have those stressors or emotional kind of things that happen. And you kind of, I say to clients sometimes when things aren't going well, that's not the time to analyze how you think you're doing. When things aren't going well, everything kind of piles on together and everything feels terrible. So it's almost like in that moment, just take a step back, breathe, and then we'll move forward accordingly. I think that's where people let emotions take over. We're human beings, we're emotional beings, but it's not letting the emotions dictate your next action, I think is the biggest thing. And that's going to come up repeatedly, whether it's on a long weekend or whether it's just a Wednesday afternoon.
I think that's really true. And a little bit on that too, with the respect idea is kind of like, if you really use yourself and what you would, you know, again, I like to say this, if you're somebody else and you were telling you what to do, you probably wouldn't be too happy about what you're doing to yourself. And I don't know why we all make the exceptions to ourselves on what it is that we should do. But the idea about that, about kind of the respecting the idea about going, you know, and staying on this, what effectively I think that we're doing is, it's truly like, these are life decision and life coaches through this. So it's not a life coach, it's still, you know, a physical coach, but really physically our bodies and what we're capable of doing is going to affect our mental outlook tremendously. And on many different levels, I think between, you know, work, family, social, sleep, activity, I think all those things, as far as kind of leading, you know, I don't want to call it necessarily a healthy lifestyle, but something where you're able to do the things that you want to do, and be able to be a part of the things you want to be a part of, that those aren't really being hindered.
I love it. I think that's the mic drop moment. Unfortunately, I have a hard stop in a couple of minutes, Craig. I think we're going to do a part 2 later this year for sure. I want to dig in more with you, but where can everyone find you online?
Craig Thomas Fitness online. I'm revamping my website currently, but I'm all over Facebook these days. Some on Instagram here and there. It's Craig T is my handle, 740, Craig T 740 on Instagram. And Craig Thomas underneath Facebook. I am doing some construction on this stuff, but perfect for the moment. That's where I am for now.
Yeah, man. I'll link everything in the show notes. Craig, thanks again for taking the time, man. Like I said, we're definitely going to do a part 2 later this year. I want to dig deeper with you for sure.
John, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.